I think the master plan is to implement total control and to run a society with two sets of rules, one for a small group of oligarchs. So I don't know if you ever saw the interview after Jared Kushner left the first Trump administration. He gave an interview and he said, given what's happening in biotech, I'm going to be the first generation to live forever, the last generation not to live forever.
I think that there's a good probability that my generation is, hopefully with the advances in science, either the first generation to live forever or the last generation that's going to die.
I just had one of our subscribers meet, have dinner with Steve Wolfram, and Wolfram was saying it doesn't matter that we do the digital control grid, because if you look at what AI can do with biotech, we can live forever.
You know, if we look at sort of what the important developments that might happen in the future are, probably the one that's going to be sort of the biggest discontinuity in human history is when human immortality is achieved, which it undoubtedly will be. How will it be achieved? There are two basic paths. It's either, technology and electronics and so on, or it's biology.
So now, you can't let 8 billion people live forever because you're going to have an environmental problem. So you have one group of people who apparently think they're going to live forever. And then you have another set of rules for everybody else, and you want to put them on a trajectory to steadily decline in terms of number of population. So I think you're looking at a very long-term plan to reduce the population and create a two-class society where you have, the oligarchs and then everybody else. And the oligarchs are free of having to manage everybody else, one, because they have complete control, but they can say, they can turn it over to AI and let the AI do it. And then when things go wrong, they can just blame the AI. It wasn't me, it was the AI.
Well, a Malthusian society and that vision, I believe, is something that, has been pushed by the likes of Bill Gates, who's buying up all the farmland in the United States. And again, just to play devil's advocate here, when you speak of these oligarchs, like, who are they? What evidence convinces you, that this is a coordinated effort rather than the natural evolution financial systems?
I used to live and work with them.
It's amazing. I think I got the best FHA commissioner in the history of HUD. It's the first woman commissioner in the history of HUD. And I'm very proud that the Bush administration was able to attract someone of Austin Fitt's talent off of Wall Street to come down and help us. And she's an expert in financing.
So, I lived in that world and I watched them become more and more alienated.
Who is them?
So it's the people who run the financial system. At any given time, it's 100 to 1,000 people who run the different key spots in the banks, the insurance companies, the central bank, and the treasury. And if you look at, and that system is very much done by consensus through all these different groups and meetings and everything else, very organic. And, but I saw them reach a wide consensus that you couldn't trust the average person to behave in a responsible way. And, and so you had to assert more central control. And essentially, by giving people lots of consumer attention and choice, move them out of having any political say whatsoever. So you wanted to reduce them to the point where their vote or their participation in the political system didn't mean anything, but you wanted to do it in a way where you could persuade them to take all their capital and invest it in a way that you could use it to build in the direction you wanted to build.
Well, the stock market is telling the most highly valued companies are AI companies. AI is going to be, if you want to be cynical, which I am, the market is telling you that the most valuable stocks are the ones that are building the digital prison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the only growth in the country at the moment is the building of the digital prison. Think about that for a second.
Jeez.
That's it. The growth in the sectors are building our future enslavement. That's where the last bit of growth is coming from.
So right now, if I go to a meeting with people who are trying to stop the control grid and trying to stop a data center, I can get them to pull out their portfolios and I can show them they're financing the very data centers they're trying to stop.
Thank you. The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to AlexJonesApp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final hour of War Room Live. Got a lot more videos to show you still. Go over some of the other Supreme Court decisions. Supreme Court rules geofence warrants require constitutional privacy protection. So this is actually very good news, in my opinion. Good decision. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that law enforcement's use of sprawling warrants that sweep up smartphone location data requires privacy protections under the Fourth Amendment in a boost to critics who view their use as an unconstitutional dragnet. Justice Elena Kagan wrote the majority opinion, which held the sensitive data scooped up by geofence warrants counts as Fourth Amendment search and offers individual a reasonable expectation of privacy, even if they may be in a public area. An individual has a reasonable expectation of privacy in records about his cell phone's location, and police intrude on that constitutionally protected interest when they demand the information, even though for a limited time and from a third-party tech company. So again, that's very good. Very good to see. And good to know. And it's not like it's helping, right? It's not like it's helping, right? It's not like they're actually using this information to better make Americans safer. They're using it to, I don't know what, do a lot of other stuff, but it's certainly not helping keep anybody safer ever. And there was a, I don't know if I have it here, but I just thought about it, and it was a picture showing that the city in which Savannah Guthrie's mother was kidnapped is basically covered in flock cameras. So it's just like, okay, so you couldn't help a kidnapping victim, even though the entire city is covered in flock cameras, but you want to put them everywhere for our safety. There's an incompatibility here. There's a disjointed aspect of this that should probably be repaired. Justices expand presidential powers over regulation, but not the Fed. In twin rulings, the justices on the Supreme Court said President Trump could fire independent regulators for any reason, but explicitly affirmed the Fed's independence and said its leaders could not be fired at will, which is kind of awkward when you have this pseudo-governmental, actually private bank conglomerate called the Fed printing all your money. Seems like the elected representatives of the United States should have a say in that. But of course we don't, because of the trick that was pulled on us in 1913 that we've been incapable of undoing ever since. The justices, meanwhile, struck down a precedent aimed at curbing political influence at some agencies, but did not give Trump the same power over the Fed. In a 6-3 ideologically divided decision, the justices struck down a nearly century-old precedent that has allowed Congress to insulate the leaders of the Federal Trade Commission and roughly two dozen other independent regulatory agencies from political influence by requiring the president to have good reasons to dismiss them. The ruling is likely to usher in major changes to the structure of the federal government, and it fulfills a major goal of the Trump administration and many conservatives who have long argued that the president should exercise nearly unfettered authority over the executive branch. And this is, it's, you know, it's a big win. Trump calls it a big win. I just have trouble seeing anything as a win these days. I mean, that's just where I'm at, where it's like, okay, maybe in another situation, I would see this as good. But, you know, Trump just put in the son-in-law of the president of the World Jewish Congress to run the Fed. So I'm like, do I even want Trump having unfettered control over this? It seems like that just means giving a very select cabal of Israeli billionaires total control. Doesn't even feel like I'm giving Trump anything. It feels like Trump is a puppet. So congratulations to the Kushners for, you know, being able to fire FTC people at will. And this decision is, so the headline says, Supreme Court okays late arriving mailed ballots and loss for Trump. The Supreme Court on June 29th said Mississippi can count late arriving mail-in ballots, handing a defeat to President Donald Trump, who's trying to curtail voting by mail. And this is one of these situations where it's like, vote by mail shouldn't be a thing. If it's a thing, then yeah, I guess you have to make some allowances for the fact that you're not in charge of when your ballot gets delivered. Because, like, I understand the reasoning behind this. The reasoning is, if you accept mail-in ballots, it's not the person's fault. I mean, I'm sure it's happened to you. It's certainly happened to me, where you send a package and it doesn't usually happen with FedEx or, you know, a private business. But with U.S. Postal Service, I mean, I've gotten Christmas packages that arrived in February, right? Things will just go missing for weeks on end. And then it gets delivered like nothing ever happened. You check the post date and you're like, this was sent in December and I just got it in February. What the hell? So I can understand how it's unfair that, hey, I put my ballot in the mail, I sent it in, and the Postal Service just didn't deliver it. That's not fair. Okay, it took the Postal Service 2 extra weeks to get it. Now my vote doesn't count because the Postal Service is incompetent. So I understand the reasoning why you would have to allow late arriving ballots as long as they were postmarked by election date. The thing is, we shouldn't have mail-in ballots. So, like, that's the issue here. The issue is we're trying to cobble together a rule set to fulfill a function that never should have happened. We never should have opened up mail-in ballots for every single person or every single state. Legally, it shouldn't have ever happened, because in order to change the laws in that way, you're supposed to do it through the legislature. But this was done by fiat by the secretaries of state. Total violation of the rule of law and the way these things are supposed to happen. Then you have people like Mark Zuckerberg giving tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to fund this whole program. None of this should be happening. None of this should have to go to the Supreme Court, because there shouldn't be mail-in ballots to any sizable amount. It should be people overseas who are on deployment in the military. There should be military ballots, which you can handle in an entirely different structure with its own social service and everything. I mean, a postal service and everything. And for, like, maybe the 1,000 people that know they're not going to be in town, and so they make arrangement to vote when they're not actually in the city. Yeah, he gave nearly $500 million to get Biden elected by getting mail-in ballots. So it's like, okay, this is a defeat for Trump, but really the defeat for Trump is that mail-in ballots still exist. The Republicans won't pass the SAVE Act. The House Majority Leader in the Senate won't fire the... There's like this character that's like the Senate parliamentarian, and it was somebody who was appointed by Obama and just runs the Senate. And it doesn't matter who we vote for, and it doesn't matter who even the leadership in the Senate, what they want to do. The parliamentarian just decides what they do. We don't even know who this person is. They never had to run for their position. They've been there for like 20 years. And apparently we can't get things done because this appointment, this position that just is supposed to be a functionary, is supposed to be there just to, like, a robot, just like making sure the rules are followed, won't allow Republicans to table things that should be voted on. It's just this whole system is screwed. This whole system is screwed up. we shouldn't. It's very similar to the this woman, Elizabeth McDonough. It's similar to a lot of other stuff that's happened recently, where it's like we shouldn't even, like the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was written during a time in which white Europeans were the only ones who could become citizens. So it was written to make up for a condition that doesn't exist anymore. And yet we're still deciding things on the 14th Amendment. It's not, it shouldn't be valid because it shouldn't exist. Other laws have passed since then that make the Fourth Amendment unnecessary and counterproductive. But like we retain it for some reason. It's crazy. Like it shouldn't exist at all. I'm not going to be excited one way or the other of how the Supreme Court decides. It shouldn't be a thing they're deciding on. It shouldn't exist. Mail-in ballots shouldn't exist. It doesn't really matter to me whether, I mean, certainly this will make it easier for them to cheat. Certainly it's not hard to understand how if you can put the vote by mail ballots in after you've already collected and counted all of the votes that came in person, it's like impossible to not screw that system up. Like, why wouldn't they? So obviously I disagree with the decision, but I disagree with the law the decision is even discussing. It's not even a law. It's not even a thing that happened. This is what I really don't understand. If the Supreme Court is going to decide something about mail-in ballots, shouldn't it decide whether or not the mail-in ballots were lawfully created? Because they weren't. And it's not even a debate. It's like the Constitution, just about every state says changes to the voting system must be made through the legislature. During COVID, they just said, it's an emergency. We're the Secretary of State. We're doing mail-in ballots. Mark Zuckerberg designed the system for us. And they just did it. Totally illegal. But if no one stops them, nobody punishes them, if you count the votes and then accept the results, then I guess that's what they get to do. They call it a grace period. U.S. court endorses grace period for mail-in ballots. So that's what I mean. It's like, okay, yeah, I guess you do need a grace period if you have this retarded, ridiculous, incompetent system that's impossible to verify who actually won the election. Then, yeah, I guess you have to make some allowances for that. But it shouldn't exist. So can the Supreme Court tell us that? That'd be nice. That'd be something worth something. And if we can't secure our elections, then what is the point of any of this? Because, you know, it's not fun to have to fight like this constantly. It's not fun to have to, like, literally constantly be on your guard against a whole array of vicious elements trying to do whatever they can to destroy you. It really sucks. And in a way, it's almost like if we just accept that our system is screwed, like, I'd almost rather be in a country like the Soviet Union, where just everybody knows that everything is corrupt and that there's no ability for you to stop it. It's almost just frustrating and annoying that we're still dangled the possibility that we could correct things electorally. I think it's pretty clear now with the way the Republicans are being, it's not ever going to happen. We're not going to get deportations. We're not going to get even a functional electoral system, despite the fact that we voted for that and we won. You'd think in a democracy that's what would happen, but that's just not happening. So in a way, it's almost just like, can we just accept, and so we just go about our business and just deal with it? I'm saying this facetiously, obviously, but it's so unbelievably frustrating knowing that the people in office right now have more than enough power to solve all of this, and they just won't do it. Let's go to Tina Peters here now, clip number 10. Here's her talking about how to secure elections, as if anybody needed to be told this, right? As if any of this even needs to be discussed. It's like, if you're going to have voting, then the voting system has to be secure. duh. How are you going to have voting if the voting system isn't secure? If you're going to have mail-in ballots, you're not going to have a secure system. So if you're going to have mail-in ballots, you're not going to have a secure system, meaning you're not going to be able to actually know who you voted for and who actually won. So this whole thing is pointless anyway. But it's like, it's just one of these things that's like, okay, now let's listen to the expert firefighter tell us that water puts out fire. It's like, this is all obvious. This is all obvious, okay? It's not hard to secure an election system. It's just hard to secure an election system when half your country is Democrats and they don't want a secure election system because their power is derived entirely by fraud. Here's Tina Peters.
We don't need to, there's so much proof out there. We don't need to prove that the elections were stolen. We need for them to come and say, here's the proof they weren't stolen. You know, we need to, like I said, we need to have voter registration right. Every 2 years in person, paper voter card. We need to have citizenship and residency check. We need to have a witness signature. So making the clerks, that they can witness the signatures. We need to be stored by precinct. So, you know, a precinct is usually about 2,000 voters, 2,000 people. It's very easy to do. You know, we need to the poll books, the mail-in voting. You know, you only need mail-in voting, or you only need absentee voting for people that are verified that have a need for that. And it's just rampant. Election day, one day. The Constitution says there will be one day for voting. It needs to go back to one day you go vote. And on election night, they're counted where they're cast under video. They're scanned to a PDF, the ballot images, the tally sheets, paperwork. The voting type is... The results have to be signed by the judges. So here you have local oversight, local control. So then you don't get into people that want to say, well, the federal government shouldn't be in our elections. But the federal government can be in our elections, because if it's a federal election, you need to save these files that were destroyed for 22 months. And in Colorado, it's 25 months. So there needs to be more oversight. It needs to come down to a local level.
So are you in favor of the Save America Act or not?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I believe that only voters that are eligible to vote should vote, because as we all know that if someone else that's not eligible, it dilutes the vote.
Voter registration every 2 years in person, paper voter cards, citizenship and residency checks, witness signatures, results stored by precinct, poll books for mail-in ballots only for people who are verified as needing them, ballots counted where they're cast and under video surveillance. And it's just like, yeah, duh, you know, and again, I'm not disrespecting Tina Peters here, because she's exactly right, and apparently this needs to be said, but it's like, what, you know, you hear that list, you know, if you were to take somebody, pluck somebody out from 100 years ago and go, here's what we want to do. They'd be like, what else would you do? What are you guys doing? Like, you just described the way you hold an election. If you guys are doing something different, you're doing it wrong. Why would you not do it this way? No, the only reason you wouldn't do it that way is because you wanted illegal immigrants to vote, or you wanted to use mail-in ballots to cheat. It's the only reason. It's the only possible reason. And like Tina Peters said at the beginning of the clip, she's like, you know, Democrats want us to prove that it's been stolen. Well, first of all, it's the authorities doing the stealing, and they have the information. They should be the ones who would hold people to account. But if they're the ones committing the crime, how do you think you're going to get that information ever? But she says, you know, really, they should have to prove that it's secure. The point about mail-in ballots is it can never be secure. Period. It can never be secure. You can never assure the wider populace, the wider public, you can never guarantee that the votes that came in were actually cast by the people who claimed to send them in. You just can't. It's impossible. Can't be done. shouldn't be allowed. It's as simple as that. It's called the chain of custody. And if the chain of custody wouldn't be sufficient to present evidence in court, it shouldn't be sufficient to cast a vote for president. In other words, you can't just show up in court and go, this is the murder gun. Trust us. It was mailed to us yesterday. Well, where did it come from? How do you know it was the murder weapon? Did you follow who collected it? It's like, don't worry about any of that. We no longer have the gun, by the way, but trust me, you know, here's a photocopy of a picture of the gun. So you got to convict the guy for murder. It's like, no, you have to actually have, here's who collected the evidence. Here's who transferred the evidence. Here's where it was tested in a lab. Here's the scientist who tested it. Here's how they returned it. Like, you have to have the custody or else the evidence can't be shown. It's the same thing in voting. If you can't prove that it was you that cast the vote, it shouldn't be counted. Right? I mean, that's what I would love to ask a Democrat. How do you guarantee a mail-in ballot is the person who it says it is? There's no answer because there's not a way. Now, let me repeat that. And I'll give you $1,000 if you can get a real answer to this from a Democrat. Ask a Democrat, how do you guarantee a mailed-in ballot was actually sent by the person? It has to be at scale. I could find a single ballot. I could contact that single person. How do you do that for everybody that cast a ballot? It's impossible. It would cost too much money, be too many resources. You would actually have to go through name by name and call somebody, but then you have to verify there. You'd have to get them to show the ID anyway. Like, it doesn't make any sense. There's no answer. There's no way. If there was a way, it's not implemented now. If there was, even if you could ask somebody, how do you guarantee that a mail-in ballot is legitimate? First, there is no answer. Second, if they are able to come up with something, it's something they invented themselves and is not being implemented right now. So, we probably shouldn't have it. So here's a novel method of vote casting, which cannot be guaranteed, which cannot be made secure, which cannot be even tracked or monitored to any sufficient degree. Why was it ever allowed to be implemented? Nobody would do this even in their own, you know, personal life, right? Even if I was just like, even if you're like an elementary school teacher and you're trying to vote on what the new class pet should be, a gerbil or a lizard, like, you're not just going to let some student come up and go, here's everybody's votes, ma'am. Don't worry. Don't ask them. I collected them. Here they are in envelopes. The envelope is sealed. So yeah, that's how you know it's true. It's good. So even that, you'd be like, go sit down. No, we're doing a real vote here because I want to actually understand what the majority of the people want. There's no way to guarantee a mail-in vote. That should be the end of the discussion. Why are we still talking? We have been talking about this for 6 years at this point. Just about this time, it was about June of 2020 that the lockdown had dragged on for about 3 months at this point. People were still thinking, oh, it'll be up by 4th of July. And we were sitting here going, no, this is all in service of the mail-in ballots because they're going to use the mail-in ballots to cheat. And they're going to do it in such an obvious way that's going to piss off Trump and the Trump Republicans. And they're going to use that to false flag us into being domestic terrorists for questioning the election. 6 years later, we've had to sit and watch it roll out exactly as we predicted. And nobody will step up to say the obvious.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that going bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything.
And on the
let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the Mark of the Beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve Parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to top economist and great patriot, Peter Kirkelly, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle-affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record the biggest company because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation. They can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers are telling us.
God always gives his people a way out, but the people perish always for lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. Call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you can have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot to cover here in the final segment of today's show. Again, a lot of just sort of responses and reactions to the Supreme Court decisions. And apparently the Supreme Court will tomorrow decide on one of the most important decisions they have to make. Let's go now to clip number 12. This is Steve Bannon responding to the fact that Mark Wayne Mullen, head of the DHS, despite being delivered victory on a silver platter with the Haitian TPS, Somali TPS, temporary protected status being revoked, has instead decided to just let him stay. Why? Who knows? I'm open to speculation. Here's Steve Bannon.
We're burning daylight. This gets me back to my favorite, Mark Wayne Mullins. I don't think he's not with us. He's not a mass deportations guy. Now he nominated his buddy. You know, for Oklahoma being one of the greatest of the MAGA states, the political class there, not so much. Just not cutting edge. I think Mark Wayne Mullen has been a total complete disaster as Homeland Security. I thought yesterday he was unprepared and kind of mumbling about, and even Tommy Lauren over at Fox lit him up, and other people have lit him up. But it was like confusing that he's now saying, well, what they should do is fill out the paperwork for permanent status. No. You've had plenty of time to plan for this. The buses should have rolled up. You should have gone out there to Ohio where they're eating the dogs and the cats. Go out. The buses should have been there. And come on. You know where they live. Get the buses. Let's load the buses and let's have the planes right there at the airport. Heck, we'll give them private service and fly back. Don't even need to take commercial. All of the 20 million need to go. And if people are hearing these other immigration scams, they need to go immediately. Not, what are you talking about? You're going to give them time to that they can review and see if they got to fill out a form? Oh, they haven't filled out the forms. I don't give a damn about the form. What in the hell are you thinking about? You got to come on and you have to step into a decision. Good God, it's hard enough to have the Supreme Court ever have our back. They have your back across the board, and you're not ready. Why are you not ready? Why were the buses not rolling to Springfield? Why were the buses not going to where you know the temporary protective status is? And just go, get on the bus. We're going to the airfield. Grab what you can. We'll ship the rest. We'll do it free. We'll ship the rest. You get free delivery. Hell, Mike Lindell gives it on the pillows. We'll give it all your stuff. We'll ship back. Just give us an address in Haiti, but the address is going to be Haiti because you're going to Haiti because you're a citizen of Haiti.
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be nice if that just happened like that? And again, the problem is the Trump administration won't just do it in a business-like fashion, which is all that this requires. Because what do you think would happen if the Trump administration, it would be this like, I mean, what they do is they make a big dog and pony show out of it and have whoever it is out there making videos and going, we are clamping down. We're going to send these people back and like make a big deal out of it and make it this big. But then nothing actually happens. But then they don't actually deport everybody. So they just piss everybody off. They make this big performative thing that makes everybody think they're all, you know, they're these evil people doing this evil stuff. They're not even doing anything. They're just talking about it. The ideal would be the exact opposite, would be that we never hear from the Trump administration officials. We don't have to. We don't need to hear from them. The left is going to complain about whatever. You don't need to respond to them. And if you do, you need to respond like Merrick Garland responded. Now, in the case of Merrick Garland, he actually was persecuting innocent people. He actually was flagrantly violating the rule, the role that he was given in order to progress his own political agenda. I despise Merrick Garland with every ounce of my being. But damn it if I don't admire his ability to very calmly and with professional tenor do extraordinary things. That's all we need. We don't need Mark Wayne Mullen or whoever else, Deportation Barbie. We don't need any of these people doing any of this stuff. We don't need them talking about it. We don't need them selling the American people on it. We need very quiet and efficient operators to just do what the law requires. And if the left starts screaming about it, which they absolutely will, the response needs to be totally calm, totally disturbed. You just need to just go, well, this is the law and I'm following the law and I have no personal feelings about this one way or the other. And this is just what the law says. So if you want the law changed, talk to Congress. In the meantime, I'm doing my job. That's it. Oh, well, but don't you think that Haitians are, but can't we, but you know, we offered them and don't you think that, and they can just say that and you just ignore them. And you just don't respond and you just keep doing it. And that's it. It's done. Instead, they make all this noise, they make it a big production, they make it a big show, and then nothing actually happens. We need the exact opposite. So like, even the way Bannon was just pitching it, Even that is unnecessary. We don't need big buses. We don't need to make it a big show. It doesn't need to be, you get the hell out of here. We'll pack up your stuff and send it. It's like, that's fine. I get where he's coming from. But, like, that's not even necessary. All that's necessary is just, like, quietly in a week or two, about 4 or 5 planes a day start taking off and shipping Haitians back home. And you don't need to tell anybody about it. You don't need to brag about it. You don't need to film it. You don't need to score points with it. It just needs to happen. God forbid the Trump administration ever just quietly and professionally do anything. I mean, they will. They'll quietly and professionally expel Palestinian students and anything else that they actually want to do, but they won't just enforce the law when that is literally all that's required. That's it. And also, I feel similarly when it comes to things like Anthony Fauci, where it's like we keep having these big public hearings where a bunch of noise is made, where a bunch of accusations are made, and then nothing happens. And nothing can happen. Like, it's not like, okay, we're having this hearing, and if it goes well, he goes to jail, and if it goes badly, he gets away. He's always getting away. He's always walking out of there, free man. So you're going to bring him up. You're going to let him lie to you like you did before. And then nothing's going to happen. What should be happening is we should just hear one morning, Anthony Fauci's been arrested. And when it comes up in the press conference, the administration spokesperson can just say, look, 15 million people died. We think he covered up and was responsible for some of those deaths. We have to treat this seriously. If he's innocent, then he'll be let go. But we have to let the rule of law take its course. No more questions. Thank you. That's it. That's all that needs to happen. Just buy the numbers, buy the book, enforcement of law. No shiny accoutrement. No, you know, big rally where it happened. Just do it. Just do it quietly. Just do it. Make it happen. And again, the left can cry about it. But the thing is, like, we understand the only power that the media has is the power that we give it, or that you give it in this case, Mr. President. It doesn't matter what they say if you don't respond to them. And there's a reason, there's a weird connection I'm trying to make here. And we're going to play that clip in just a second of Rand Paul talking about going after Anthony Fauci. He has reissued a request to have him criminally prosecuted. Good. That's a good first step. But at the same time, there are new studies out of places like Spain that show, again, incontrovertibly, that the COVID boosters cause cancer. They cause cancer. It has been proven in study after study. It is being discussed on mainstream media overseas. The American media has not mentioned it, will never mention it, because their role is directing the attention of the American people. And their purpose is directing that attention away from things that are actually happening, towards things that aren't actually happening, in order to get movement, political action to the thing that's not happening, and so the thing that is happening can continue to happen unabated. Do you understand what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying? That if the media was just any percentage what they actually claim to be, they would be shouting from the rooftops about how the COVID boosters are causing cancer, causing turbo cancer, and are killing people. They'll never cover that because they don't care. Because it's not in their agenda to start a big, you know, fight and trying to get justice for people who are given cancer from booster shots. They don't want to do that. They got other things they're doing. So they're going to ignore that. It's never going to rise to the point that it, you know, actually becomes a widespread discussion. We can try to force it. But at the end of the day, we can all know that it gives us cancer. We can all know that Anthony Fauci created the virus in a lab. But until he goes to jail for it, it doesn't matter. it doesn't matter. Us knowing, it doesn't actually change anything until we change it. Till the information gets action behind it, none of this really matters. So let's go to that Rand Paul clip first. Here's Rand Paul talking about reissuing a subpoena to Anthony Fauci, hopefully holding him to account for being the world's greatest mass murderer. Let's watch.
Well, the investigation of COVID origins has been going on for several years. The Biden administration stymied us and wouldn't give us any of the documents. The Trump administration has been very cooperative, particularly Secretary Kennedy. They've turned over virtually everything. And what we now know, beyond a reasonable doubt, is that Anthony Fauci did indeed fund gain-of-function research. We have the evidence that the experiments were gaining in function. The viruses were becoming more lethal, more attachable to human cells, and more infectious. We do know that this was going on, that was funded by the NIH, specifically under the tutelage of Anthony Fauci. We know all of that, but we know even more now. We know that the initial estimate by the scientists at the CIA was that this came from the lab. They agreed with our supposition. But Anthony Fauci was able to coerce, cajole, persuade, and dangle money to get people in the intelligence community to change their vote. So a scientific commission within the CIA voted 6-1 to say it came from the lab. He somehow was able to get that change. We have evidence of that happening. The virologists that he handpicked that were big recipients of federal dollars, all of them initially were saying, it looks like it was manipulated. The virus looks manipulated. He was able to convince them otherwise. We now have evidence that in January of 2020, that he was already acknowledging that the virus did not come from the wet market, that the wet market was a spreader event, but wasn't an initial event because we had lineages of people way before the wet market that were getting sick. Everyone acknowledged that, but for years he's been telling us it came from animals at the wet market. This was all misdirection. This was a conspiracy. This was a cover-up. And he has not really gotten his just desserts on this. And we want to make sure that the American public and that history records that he was involved with funding this dangerous research that led to a pandemic that killed 15 million people. There needs to be repercussions.
It's so unbelievably insane that Rand Paul is the only one that cares about this. It just hit me during that how crazy this is, because nothing he said there was speculation. None of it requires any faith or belief in Rand Paul himself. Like, this is all black and white evidence in their own words, with the attempt to cover it up, with, you know, the email talking about the conspiracy, including the line like, you need to delete this email so it doesn't get found later. Like, it is undeniable. So my question, the thing that really struck me listening to Rand Paul right there, is what the hell is wrong with everybody who believed in COVID? What the hell is wrong with y'all? See, I never fell for it. I never masked up. I would wear a mask occasionally if I felt like it. But typically, I actually kind of enjoyed the lockdown, going into stores and just looking people in the eye as they tell you to wear a mask and just getting stuff off the shelf and paying. Never wore a mask, never locked down. Didn't take any boosters, wasn't rendered horribly sick because I, you know, took an injection that I didn't need. I didn't suffer from any of this stuff. You did. That was all because of Anthony Fauci covering it up his own complicity in the creation of the virus. Why do you not care about that? It's like, okay, so the people who were suspicious of the vaccine and the lab-created virus originally, were the only ones who care now that it's all come out. But it's all come out now. It's not a question of belief. It's not a question of interpretation. If you got a single vaccine, do you not care that Anthony Fauci lied about where the virus came from, if you lock down, if your kid was forced to stay home from school, even if you were for it, if you were in favor of it, do you not have an even greater reason than me to be angry at Anthony Fauci? You believed his lies. You fell for the crap he was pushing. Your life got made tangibly worse because of what he did. Why does nobody care about this? Again, it's not a speculation. It's not a conspiracy theory. Anthony Fauci knew where the virus came from. He lied about it. He covered it up. He conspired to conceal the creation of the virus for no reason other than covering his own butt. Because again, I could see how a leftist or a liberal could go, well, you know, maybe made a mistake. You could even like try to justify it somehow going, well, you know, they didn't know where it came from totally. And he had a reason to, you know, really want people to trust the science, like whatever. You can make up whatever you want to try to justify it if you want. But like, there's no justifying this. There's no excusing this. There was no higher good that he was pursuing. This was not a crime committed in the pursuit of what he truly believed to be national security or, you know, health security for the American people. He lied and covered up because of his own base ambitions, because he didn't want to be blamed for it. And this had a tangible, real-world impact on our ability to fight the virus, on the proposals, the programs that were put forward to stop the spread of the virus. All of those things were predicated on the idea that we didn't know where this virus came from. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know how dangerous it was. So better safe than sorry. None of that had to happen if Anthony Fauci told the truth. If Anthony Fauci was honest about where it came from, we could have avoided almost every single one of the major negative impacts from COVID. Because if we knew where it came from, we could trace back the actual virus itself. And we would have known, which we did, and we were lied to about it, but this is the whole point, isn't it? But let's just, taking it on face value, if we had known where the virus came from, what virus it was, we would have known that it didn't kill young people, so we wouldn't have had to shut down schools. We would know that it didn't require us to say goodbye to our dying family members behind plexiglass. All of that was predicated on the lie that Anthony Fauci told. Why does nobody care that they were lied to? Why is there not a single Democrat in Congress who's mad at Anthony Fauci for doing this to them? Like, really think about that. Really think about what is going on psychologically in the minds of Americans who can be told with absolute certainty, dead to rights, first person evidence proof that Anthony Fauci created the virus in a lab and lied about it, and they don't care, even though they're the ones that believed him, they're the ones that stayed locked down, they're the ones that wore a mask, they're the ones that got the shots. But they don't care that he knowingly lied to them. And that, I can't do anything about. I can't do anything about it. Sorry, that's, you got to do it. But just to close out here, we'll go to clip number 8. This is the bombshell from Professor Angus Dalgleish. Again, if it's just crazy that people don't care about this, let's just watch.
That people who'd been stable with cancer, melanoma, for years started relapsing at the beginning of 22. And I asked for any reason why this might have occurred. And I noted they'd all been given boosters by their GPs, which if they'd asked me, I wouldn't have done that. And so we had to look around. What's the reason? Why would a booster allow a cancer to come back? Well, it turned out it's very simple, that boosters suppress the T cells. Response. The first two will increase it a bit, but a booster suppresses it. And that's exactly what we found. But then a group from Madrid published a wonderful paper saying T cell exhaustion after third COVID vaccine in cancer patients, with an incredible data showed it very, very clearly. And so therefore, any cancer suppressed and controlled by the immune system, you suspect might pop up after the booster. Surgeons noted their colorectal patients were very difficult to treat. They were presenting late and they were presenting young. And they found that these patients had all had the booster too. And they called, a red flag. And I called a red flag that just the suspicion that the vaccine might be involved in the cancer.
Are there any studies that have linked the mRNA to cancer? Is there any sort of medical process that you can allude to that would back that up?
The strongest are the epidemiological studies. And the strongest was from Japan, a paper by Gibbo and his colleagues, which just had the raw data, and they noticed that the number of new cancer cases went up with each booster vaccine.
So again, double-blind, confirmed studies out of Spain. This is not just a correlation. This is causation. They know it, but they're not reporting on it. Why is that not like the number one story across the country? Where are the blaring warning sirens saying the COVID boosters cause cancer? They're never going to come. They're never going to talk about this. Now I'll leave it up to you to decide whether that's because maybe they're just embarrassed, maybe they have their own personal reasons, or maybe it's because everything worked exactly as it was intended. Maybe they made the virus on purpose so they could release it on purpose, so they could lie about it, so they could get the lockdown, so they could rig the election, so they could stage January 6th, so they could start persecuting Trump supporters. Maybe that's why. Maybe they don't report on the mass death that Anthony Fauci initiated and then perpetuated on all of us because they like the mass death, because they're in favor of it and they understand the reason why all of this is happening, that none of this was a mistake and none of it was even unknown to them, that they helped cover it up just like Fauci helped cover it up. Of course, we were here the whole time telling you the truth the whole time, warning you the whole time about what was actually going on. I have no doubt that we saved God only knows how many lives during COVID by warning about the dangers of the COVID vaccine. And we will continue to do that, as unpopular as it makes us, as difficult as it makes our simple mission of informing the world, as we're constantly attacked under various claims, but always for the same reason, because we tell the truth about what they're up to. We give you the information they would rather have withheld. Support us in this mission by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, to let them know who sent you. That's going to do it for us. Big week of shows today. Tune in tomorrow, and we'll see you then.
In the forbidden mountains of ancient China, Alex Jones, the warrior, returns to complete his training. His fists thunder against globalist lies. Each board he shatters destroys another New World Order deception. Forged in the fire of truth, he trains day and night. Iron palm strikes smashing through Big Pharma's walls. He prepares for the ultimate demon, Fentanyl the Dragon.
Oh, hello, Alex. It is I, Fentanyl the Dragon, your arch nemesis.
Fentanyl, you dare to return and face me?
Visit thealexjonesstore.com today.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
America's worth saving. I seen this country build towns where there was nothing but dust and empty sky. Men worked sun up to sundown, built roads, railways, farms, and cities with their bare hands. People came here with nothing in their pockets and somehow carved out a life worth living. That's what made this place different. Not power, not money, freedom. And as long as there's still a few hard-headed Americans standing tall, America's story ain't over yet.
You can feel the noose tightening all across America. Fight the enemy before they hang freedom itself.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.